This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 14th of April 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. With me, Tom Edwards. Coming up today, we meet the daughter of George Nakashima, who discovered two designs he did for carpet makers Edward Fields and is now working with the company to bring them to life.
Not deviating too far, but updating it a little bit so that it worked. You know, it's fun knowing that he's still with us in these designs.
Plus, we're joined by Modern Design Review's editor Laura Housley to have a flick through the second edition of the magazine. And we look at glass design with one of the men behind the Lasvit Temple of Light at this year's Salone del Mobile. All that and more besides coming up for you here on Section D on Monocle 24. Last year saw a boom in new design magazines on our newsstands, including Fiera, dedicated to the trade fairs, and Dirty Furniture, which focuses on one piece of furniture in each biannual issue. One of our favourites was Modern Design Review, edited by the design journalist Laura Housley. Its second issue has just been published, and Laura joined our design editor Tom Morris here in the studio to leaf through the pages.
The initial concept was really to do a design magazine but with a different point of view and to really take a leisurely approach to storytelling and to avoid the news stories and to produce something that was maybe a little bit more esoteric, a little bit more intellectual, and that was for us quite fun to produce as well.
Why do you think there was that sort of gap in the publishing world of design?
I don't think people necessarily approach design in that way. There are a lot of design publications, there is a lot of design media, but I felt that there was space for a magazine that was beautifully produced, that really concentrated on telling stories in a visual way and also telling less expected stories, I suppose.
How do you section up the magazine?
We have quite an original approach to that. We only have two sections in the magazine. I did away with the news section quite symbolically because I think there are lots of publications that deal with design news well. I didn't feel that that was what we needed to do, so I simply did away with that. Yeah. So you enter the magazine straight into the well, which is quite unusual. And the well is kind of a leisurely romp through various stories. And we end with a section called End Matter, which is our smaller, bittier stories. The structure really is about a flow, and the stories are daisy-chained together. There is a reason for the structure and what follows what.
Do you sort of feel the pressure to be kind of newsy and current, or is it much more kind of a reflection of your current interests and the various themes you pick up for each issue?
I purposefully avoid any pressure to feel newsy. It might be out there, but that really was the reason behind doing this, was that I wanted to rid myself of that pressure. I've been a design journalist for 18 years now. So I know what that's like, the idea of chasing the latest story, getting to it first. And I didn't really want to engage in that. I really wanted to enjoy storytelling and to focus on things that were interesting me at any given moment.
And I find that, I mean, particularly my role as well, it's very, very difficult thing to try and get a new, you know, fresh story now with the proliferation of, you know, so many great online publications that it does make it difficult to sort of get there first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in a way, it's sort of nicer to sort of step back and reflect on.
Yeah, and this is a print publication. So the magazine, in my mind, is very much about longevity. It's designed to sit on a newsstand for a long period of time. Therefore, to me, it makes sense that the stories in there also have that longevity and aren't tired and old before it hits the stands.
And the perfect example of that is you tell us the story about the beds.
We like to do quite a focused section of stories in the middle of the magazine. Last time around, we talked about wood. This time around, we're talking about textiles, and it's called the soft section. And there are several stories in there that are about textiles, but about our approach to textiles, so intimacy and comfort and cosseting and things like that. And this particular story was shot by Kalasana. He shot the beds of his friends after they'd just risen. So it's all about the intimacy of textiles.
And how sort of design meets life.
Exactly.
And design enters your
yeah,
life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very beautiful visual story.
What other stories in it? Particular highlights?
I think the button story, which is the first one, will be of interest. And for that, we also like taking small details and really concentrating on them and luxuriating in them. And I was interested in the button as an electrical device. And they're not becoming obsolete, but they're certainly rarer.
Less clicky.
Yes, exactly. And we all know the pleasure of pressing a button on a machine.
Look at that Olivetti typewriter. I can just imagine how that sounds.
I actually have that now at home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of the repercussions of doing this story is that I now have an awful lot of strange electrical devices. Absolutely. But we all know that lovely feeling of pressing a button and engaging a machine into life, into action. And so we just wanted to dwell on that. And again, we chose some really iconic buttons and shot them for this story and really spent a lot of time thinking about and focusing on that very small detail.
Tell me about the sort of collaborators you've worked with to bring Issue 2 to life.
We work with a great group of talented people, and they are photographers and writers, but also people that are engaged in the design world, so critics and designers themselves. We've had a lot of contribution from designers in the first issue and in this one as well. And they're just a great group of talented people, and all not necessarily from the design world either. That's of interest to me as well. It is quite a small pool, so I do like to commission fashion photographers or people who don't normally write, perhaps, and to throw out this really interesting subject of contemporary design to different people.
To bring a different voice into it, for sure. It's biannual. Biannual fashion magazines, we sort of all know fashion works in two seasons. The design world's slightly different. Is it seasonal? Is there a different sort of topic to each, or is it simply just two issues a year? How do you time when it's published?
I think it can be seasonal. I think it's seasonal in that there is a cycle of events, certainly in the design world, that you could say is seasonal. Whether products themselves are seasonal, I think I'd probably say they aren't, or they shouldn't be, at least. But in terms of the cycle, it seems like quite a natural cycle for me. Two issues a year is kind of fits the design world. We all know the fashion world is a little bit quicker than the design world. So yeah, two is comfortable.
So Salonia's running this week in Milan. We'll both be heading there. Looking forward to it?
Yes, absolutely.
What highlights are you looking forward to?
I try and see as much as I can, and I feel it's very important too. So I will do a different area a day. That's how I tend to manage my days. I'm not sure. I've got a really lengthy list of what to see, actually. Yeah. I prefer to go and see and try not to have too many preconceptions, actually.
Absolutely.
You will know now that it's very common to see objects and pictures of things and installations before you actually get out there. And I do actually try not to look too much at that. I do like to go and see the things in the flesh and then make my decisions then.
Issue 3?
Yes.
You're working on it now? Has it started?
I've had really quite clear ideas about issue 3, which is reassuring. So I think we know what we're doing, yeah.
That was the editor of the Modern Design Review, Laura Housley, chatting to our own Tom Morris. The late woodworker George Nakashima sketched two rug designs for carpet makers Edward Fields back in 1959. The designs never came to life. Now, after discovering a folder filled with her father's sketches, Nakashima's daughter is overseeing a full collection of the rugs. In collaboration with 80-year-old Edward Field and its global design director Yasmina Benazou, Mira Nakashima has brought the late designer's work to fruition. Monocle's Megan Billings met with Nakashima to view the furniture maker's latest venture.
The rugs came to be kind of serendipitously. There were rugs that were designed by my father for Ed Fields in 1959 that had been in the studio since then and in my parents' house where my brother lives. Actually, we had hired Cameron, and Sarah Natkins came by and she said, "Oh, those are really nice rugs. What are they doing here?" And I told her the history of the rugs, and she said, "Oh, it'd be really nice." I said that they had not been put into production for some reason or other, and these were the only ones we had. And she said, "Well, it'd be nice to put them back into production, don't you think?" And I said, "Yes, that would be an interesting project." And I thought, well, that was an interesting conversation. That's not going to go anywhere. And lo and behold, Yasmina from Taiping, who took over Ed's Fields, came back to us and said, "We're interested in producing those rugs again." And then I don't remember exactly how I stumbled on them, but I kind of remembered when I was cleaning out the files, there was an old file that was labeled rugs. I ended up photocopying them and giving them copies of the designs, and they researched and created mock-ups of the designs in these specific colors that my dad had designated. Some of them we left exactly as they were, and some of them were improvised on, and I was just really happy that the tapestry that was created from this little bitty sketch was pretty amazing. I mean, just little sketch didn't look like a whole lot to me, but they thought it was exciting, and they made it into something very exciting, like changing the colors and the textures and the pile and the, you know, the composition of the fibers and so forth.
I'm curious about kind of taking over a brand in a way that, like you've done since 1990 with George Nakashima, and now you're just getting into rugs and kind of revisiting something, and this person isn't there anymore. So I'm wondering how you honor that legacy that's there and also bring it to an updated place. What's that conversation like for you?
What's kind of interesting to me, it's like my father's really not gone. He's still working with us. He's still inspiring us to do what we do. He did that with the furniture. We still work on the wood pile that he assembled for us and add to it and improvise on it. And the same with these rug designs. It was just kind of, we stumbled on them. I also stumbled on some furniture designs and did the same thing. I decided they were still interesting, and we produced them based on his drawings that were done a long time ago. One set of drawings was done in 1941, and there's another set of drawings that was done in the 1960s, around the same time as these rugs. It was just kind of interesting to take these as a basis for design, as if he were still here teaching us what to do, and not deviating too far, but updating it a little bit so that it worked. You know, it's fun knowing that he's still with us in these designs.
Looking at the rugs, they're on show here at Edward Fields, and you're known for woodwork, and they really do resemble the woodwork that you do in many of the designs. It feels as if it's wood, but it's brought to life in different color and obviously in a different form. So what was it like to venture into a different material, but also kind of bringing that woodworking feel to the floor, if you will?
That's a good question. I've always worked in wood, but my training is in architecture, so it isn't specific to one particular medium. And it's basically, you know, design is design, no matter what it is. It's just a different medium. And I had experimented earlier in the year 2000 with the Martin Guitar Company. It was a collaboration, and that's what this is too. It's not really my inspiration, but it's a collaboration with my father and also with the people at Taiping at Fields. In the year 2000, I collaborated with Martin Guitar Company. They wanted to do a commemorative guitar for my father because we used to mill our lumber there. And I'd never designed a guitar before. I didn't know anything about how to build a guitar. But it was really fun to have input with the experts on how to create a Nakashima-style guitar. And so they built a Nakashima commemorative guitar in the year 2000 in honor of my dad, and using the materials that he might have used in furniture, but using it in a different way. And this is kind of a similar thing. It's a different medium, but it's still Nakashima design, and it feels kind of familiar. It's just a different medium, and it's exciting. It's fun. I've never done rugs before. Maybe never do again, but it was fun.
I wonder if you would walk me through some of the designs.
Sure. We came across, yes. This one was obviously the conoid rug, yes. Because it was in the conoid studio, but I don't know the technical aspects. Yes. It was really fun to have Yasmina and Liz come down, and they got down on their hands and knees on the carpet, and they would pull out one thread of each of these colors to make sure that they had the right color palette with the current yarns.
Yes, so. Because the rug was sitting in the studio for 50 years, so you can imagine the real colors are usually the one you see on the side. So this one is new, brand new, but if you imagine this one is the old one, you have really to dig inside where there is no oxidation and, you know, no sun damage, to really try to find what was the original color. So after we defined the color palette, we had to mimic this technique that was done 50 years ago, where Edward Fields was actually doing the rugs all in lupine, and then with a heavy shearing, doing a cut pile. And it's something that was lost in terms of the technique, so it was difficult to try to mimic the technique, the pile height, the density. So we had to do a few trials before really being satisfied about the result. And today my biggest satisfaction is we have people who've been working for Edward Fields for 30, 40 years. When they saw this rug, they were like, oh, this is such an Edward Fields rug. And I was like, yeah, we made it.
You did it.
Yes, we made it. So, and the second one that is still in the Nakashima's house is this one, Dark Moon. And it was in a smaller version.
Yes,
it's a 4x8, perhaps, something like this, the original.
It's odd size.
Yes.
Yeah, 5x7 or something.
Yeah. Yes. And in the same color palette as the Konoi, the studio one. And so we did that one the same way as well, but this is a second version with the undyed natural walls in the background, and we did some mixtures of colors for the clouds and for the moon.
So can you tell me more about the trial and error of trying to mimic the old technique?
What we had is like the best way would have been for us to take the original rug and send it to our manufacturer in China. But we thought, you know, I was a little bit afraid that the rug could be damaged and then we would really lose it. So that would have been ideal, you know, to try to mimic something is really to have our workers in our manufacturer in China really looking at the rug themselves. While me, I was like the translator of a technique that they never experienced, because this rug was made by Edward Fields in the United States in the 50s by different workers with different technique, I would say, even if it's hand tufted, but tufting guns were different, the wool was different, and it was, you know, every brand has its signature. So it was really trying to find again the feel of it. It's not exactly the same, we will never be able to do exactly the same. But it's really to try to feel, you know, the density, the pile height, the different levels of pile height, the cut, the loop, the denier of the wool. So all that we had to do studies and trials till we got pretty close to what was made in 1959.
I've actually not often seen rugs like this that are very sculptural in the sense that it's different pile height on the...
Yes.
But in a very sculptural way.
Completely. It was Edward Fields' signature. And I think this is where, you know, Nakashima's eye and Edward Fields' signature came together. And definitely the high and low was something that Edward Fields was experiencing all the time. He was always saying that he had no thrill out of making a plain carpet. So he liked things that, you know, had texture and were bold and were expressive.
That was furniture maker Mira Nakashima speaking to Monocle's Megan Billings in New York. You're listening to Section D here on Monocle 24. From the stunning interactive Supernova to the bright colours of the Candy Collection, the Lasvit Temple of Light is an intersection for unique lighting designs and breathtaking artistic installations. From the hands of masterful Czech craftsmen, Lasvit invites people to experience the wonders of glassmaking at this year's Salone del Mobile in Milan. Monocle's Ben Ryland spoke to Maxim Velkovsky from Lasvit about what this year's collection is all about.
In the middle of our stand, you can find one of the interactive glass kinetic sculptures. All around that, you find different approaches by different designers. We are the pioneers of the kinetic glass lighting installations, which we started last year. So this year, one of the highlights will be the Supernova by Petra Krausová, which will be right in the middle of this temple designed by architect Marek Dale. You are kind of entering from all angles, you know, into the middle in the temple, so we can enjoy the light, because all the architecture and actually we are dealing with the glass and light. So all is about, you know, the different approaches by different designers. And right in the middle, you can find this interactive kinetic installation, which introduces the future into the present. So there's the idea that this kind of a supernova moves around you and it reacts on your movements with the Kinect sensors. The installation is composed of a clear glass element with a linear texture, and it creates a fascinating light patterns around you while moving through the various angles. And, you know, you are staying in the middle of this temple, and you can enjoy the power of the light, which is refracted through the glass.
And so I'm reading here that this sculpture there, it magically transforms itself in both time and space, and it responds to the viewer's movement by changing its form. Explain to me a little bit about how that works.
It's very much about engineering, because there's like hundreds of components, and this kind of thing is all about half a year of engineering. So imagine that you have like hundreds of parts, and none of them can be touched by itself, you know, so because everything is out of glass. You are actually basically doing kind of a movement that's like a Kinect sensor, and which transforms your movement into the living glass sculpture. So basically, the supernova installation has like dozens of variations, and it reacts on your movement and on the movement of the people standing just underneath. So basically, you are looking at huge, the installation has like 5 meters diameter. You're kind of enjoying the power of the light and glass together.
It sounds fascinating. It's absolutely enormous as well. And I understand that the overall shape actually pays homage to last year's kinetic sculpture, which was called Alice. Can you explain to me how the different elements play into the evolution of how these sculptures change over time?
Alice consisted of blown elements, which is really a super challenge, because imagine you are blowing every component, you know, separately. So every component has a different weight. So you have to calculate all the like the weight of the components, and then you have to program it, and then you have to test it and try it. So none of the components can't touch each other, because otherwise they would break. But same time, you can't replace glass by plastic or acrylic, because it doesn't just refract the light like a glass, you know. So our idea is to come with a new future chandelier or glass art installations that they would, you know, play in a space.
I'd really love to touch upon the candy collection here. I'm looking at a picture, and it certainly does look good enough to eat, though I suspect I shouldn't. Can you tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind this?
Well, the candy collection was really a challenge, because, you know, when Campanas came to our furnace, they got super inspired by the place we are working in, which is our furnace, and they ran around the space and they found so many colors, you know, and colorful powders and colorful glass rods and color shades. And Humberto and Fernando also tried to blow the glass themselves, and then they tried to experiment. And we always invite the designers and artists to our furnace to get inspiration from the place, as we did with Nando like say 4 years ago. So they always get the idea at the place. So it's not about, you know, sketching something from the behind the ocean from their office in Brazil, but it's about also, you know, coming into the place and get inspiration from the real processes and from the real details and molds and edges and the shine of the glass and the color. So when they started their sushi furniture some years ago, so they took the aesthetics of the sushi furniture and they translated it into this candy collection using this very colorful glass chart that we were applying actually on the glass. So imagine that you are blowing every single component for like 1 hour, so we have to, you know, lay color by color, you know, against each other to get this kind of a crazy composition.
That was Maxim Velkovsky from the Lasvit Temple of Light talking to Monocle's Ben Rylan. Now, you may be wondering where your regular Section D host Tom Morris is. Well, fear not, he's currently at Salone del Mobile in Milan, speaking to the designers and brands showing off their homewares. One such person is Patrizia Morosso, who's the head of Italian brand Morosso. They're known for colourful and characterful pieces, and for working with a great roster of designers. This year, they've teamed up with architect David Adjaye on his second ever piece of furniture. Tom Morris met Patrizia to find out more.
This year we have three big important names of architecture coming from three beautiful capitals of architecture like London, New York, Amsterdam. They probably are the most important cities in the world for architecture, for studios, not for maybe realizations. But anyway, so London with David Adjaye.
And it's, what, his second or third piece of furniture, isn't it?
Second, there is a stool, nice, but done for a little company. But the most important thing that it did before is the chair for Knoll.
Yes.
And this is another thing, because it's not one chair, it's a collection of seats, high stool, chairs, lounge chairs, and that will be a big family of a very beautiful, for me, luxury seats, done exactly for what he needs and we need also, because they are not done for residential. They are done for contract, especially for hotels. And this is a specific object for hotels, restaurants, and lounge places like that, with luxury, but very conscious of that thing, with a bit of decor, you know, the elegance of decor, but in our days. And he wants to work with chrome, gold chrome, white chrome, or black chrome, to give this idea of jewelry, in a way, no? It's very precious itself in the materials, using velvet, like wool velvets or leather or wool felt, and these kind of materials that are perfect for hotels, are very resistant, and they have a sort of sense of timeless. And Ben van Berkel is a very important architect from Amsterdam. And with him, we are starting making some just functional chairs that are exhibited outside there. Also in this case, the line is very simple, but the idea is behind is interesting. It's matching two materials like wood and iron in a unique body, in a very interesting way. And the third, that is really in the very, very first step, is the armchair of Daniel Libeskind, and starting as a gem, and then the developing will be in the next future, very in a big family of objects. Yeah.
I mean, what's the kind of the working process when you work with architects, especially of their caliber, that's used to building huge, yeah, huge edifices,
the scale is different.
And then it's coming down here.
Yeah.
I guess that's your expertise comes in then to sort of help kind of direct the creative vision a bit, or are you more free?
We are with them to collaborate. We are here for that reason, you know. Meters is the smaller dimension that they have, and we have millimeters. So, of course, sometimes there is a little bit of confusion. Funny, because all the first designs of all these people, in the beginning, they were so big. So, wow, this is not a chair, David. This is a big armchair. But it's part of our work together. We are giving the number of centimeters plus millimeters, and they have another kind of scale. But, you know, experience helps to solve problems. But, you know, they have not the scale, but they have the vision. And they have a big eye. And that is so important, also in design, because in the end, an object, a chair, is not living on a table. It's not an object. It's living on the floor, and is living inside a room, and the room is part of a building. So the architects have this kind of fantastic eye to see an object in a space, and that is something that we have to learn from them.
That was Patrizia Morosso speaking to Monocle's Tom Morris at Salone del Mobile in Milan. And that brings us to the end of this week's programme. Today's show is edited by Alex Funnell, and I'm Tom Edwards. See you at the same time again next week. Tom Morris, fear not, we'll be back from Milan, ready to tell tales from that fair. You've been listening to Section D. Thanks for tuning in.